Thanks for joining us on this week's podcast, Your Expert Advantage, a higher level of management consulting. This podcast is produced by the Canadian Association of Management Consultants, CMC Canada. My name is James Grieve, and I'm a certified management consultant based out of British Columbia and a member of CMC Canada. Our goal in this podcast is to provide management consultants, aspiring consultants, and members of the business community with great thought leadership case studies and actionable info in a conversational format that you'll be able to take back to your practice, to the office, and into the workplace to implement effectively. Part of what we'll be telling is some great stories about those who've earned their Certified Management Consultant designation and show you the value of CMC, the profession's only international certification recognized in over 40 countries. This episode, we're focused on the opportunity of creating a great change management experience. We'll explore how to make change better, faster, and easier, and how to help organizations implement change in a systematic manner. Collectively, this will create and contribute to a better customer experience, employee experience, and overall organization experience. Today, our guest is Louise Harris, certified management consultant based in Newfoundland. As a kid, Louise drove her parents nuts asking why, and so they gave her a heavy three-volume set of Tell Me Why books for her 10th birthday. 40 years later, after a career leading and designing digital and operational transformation across multiple industries, Louise was asking, why is making change happen in organizations so hard? Why does transformation fail so often? Why can't we get better results with less effort and less stress? In search of answers, Louise embarked on a PhD that explores the integration of neuroscience, design thinking, and organizational psychology to find a better way. In 2020, Louise founded the Change Design Institute to advance the tools and techniques she designed and tested with organizations and consultants during her PhD research. Her mission is to inspire and equip leaders and managers everywhere to use these tools and techniques to approach change with a focus on empathy, clarity, and action to engage with the people to make change happen with better results for everyone with much less effort and stress. Good morning, Louise, and welcome to the program. Why don't you just get your ideas on some of the biggest roadblocks of making change happen successfully in an organization?
Well, James, I think that the biggest challenges can be grouped into one of three categories. And the first area of challenge is that everyone is not on the same page as to the purpose of the change or what's going to be achieved by the change. And by everyone, I mean not only senior management and executive, but also middle management, frontline people, anyone who is involved in making this change happen. The second big area of challenge is that the effort and impact of making the change happen is not well understood and is significantly underestimated. And I'm sure that many people have experienced this. I certainly have experienced this often, both in my work in leading change and also as a consultant. And you can see that, the second challenge is severely impacted by the first challenge, because if people are not on the same page, then the effort to make the change is not going to be well understood. If you have a different idea of the purpose of the change, then you're not going to understand what the impact of the change is if your idea of the purpose is not actually aligned with what is really going on. And then the third big area of challenge is particularly that middle management and the rank and file are not committed to making the change happen. And again, this area is significantly impacted by the other two areas.
Thanks, Louise. This is a great way for us to get started here, and it sets the table of our conversation nicely for the podcast today. One question I have for you here is, as we progress onward here, is are any of these three things related to perhaps it being, the change not communicated properly from the start, or it's the maybe not the right change to take place in the organization at all? Is that a fair comment, or is that, because it's such a broad topic, is there anything at the beachhead of this that could prevent these three things or maybe make them easier?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's an excellent question, James. And I think You know, it really depends on the type of change. But what we are seeing right now in organizations is change is now is about organizations evolving. It's about evolving towards being much more digitally connected and providing digital services and using digital services for greater efficiency as well as a greater connection with customers and with employees. And so because change is about how organizations are evolving, there actually is not a predefined path of how to get there. And there is no expert who's been there before because we are charting new paths and new ways of doing things. So this means that it's critical to include people early, to include everybody who's going to be involved in making this change happen. It is impossible for senior leadership to be able to figure out everything that is going to change and what the impacts are going to be, you know, over the next few years because of so much uncertainty and because this is a new path. So I would say, you know, in answer to your question, we're moving away. Organizations need to move away from stakeholder engagement and move into stakeholder inclusion. And by that, I mean including employees, external stakeholders, whoever is impacted by the change, whoever needs to make this change happen, change the way they work, change the way they interact, they need to be included in, first of all, figuring out what are we actually going to achieve by this change? What is everybody going to achieve? What is the organization going to achieve? What are departments going to achieve? What are, you know, smaller groups going to achieve? What are we expecting to achieve by this change? And I find that that's becoming more and more critical because if we don't know what we're trying to achieve, how can we plot a path to get there?
Exactly, exactly. No, these are excellent perspectives. And, you know, by getting more people involved earlier and more frequently can take a lot of time and effort, obviously. So change projects are often not resourced to facilitate that level of engagement. And I've experienced this myself in my consulting career and seen it in organizations I've worked with. By no means am I a change management expert, but yeah, that's why I surround myself with people like yourself who understand this. And even if people are engaged, they're busy doing their own jobs operationally, and they don't have time to get involved. Now, they may want the change. They're not in a mindset where they're, you know, not accepting or, you know, wanting the change, but they're not that motivated. So how is it that we can get people motivated and find the time to, you know, point in the right direction and row together towards that goal?
Well, this is a really excellent question, James. And I think that this is an area where we're doing a lot of exploring because, you know, as I said, organizations are evolving, but also under tremendous time pressure and, you know, resource pressure. A lot of people are a lot more mentally fatigued right now because of the pandemic and other things going on in the world. So it's a really important question. How can we get people involved in figuring out why and what to change and yet still enable them to do their day jobs without completely stressing them out? And I think that's, you know, one of the biggest challenges is, like you say, there are people that want to change and they see the organization needs to change and, you know, their area needs to change. But they just don't have the time and the energy to engage in the traditional ways that we have always engaged people before. And so solving this challenge was the prime motivation behind my taking time out to do a PhD. I wanted to find a way to involve people in figuring out why and what needs to change early on with much less effort in less time and with better results. And, you know, the supposition behind this is that if you involve people early, you actually have a way less change management, resistance management effort ongoing and later on, and you have way less rework and you get much better results. So there's a huge return on investment from involving people early. But as you say, it's still a challenge. People are still constrained by their time and their energy. So we need to look at different ways of involving people.
Excellent. Yeah, this is fantastic. Now let's shift gears a little bit here towards scoping change. So when we, you know, organizations, obviously there's no one size fits all, and it takes all kinds of kinds. And when we're looking at organizations and the type of changes they have, you have identified technological changes, changes due to the pandemic, and, you know, companies basically reacting to what's going on around them. There's, you know, it's hard to be proactive in these days because everything, you know, the ground is moving under our feet so fast now, it's tough to do that. So when we talk about the scope of change, I just like your thoughts as an expert in this field on identifying change and then tackling it in small pieces, or if there is an either or is it advantageous to look at a large change and then getting cross-functional teams? Now, I realize there's not a one-size-fits-all, but based on your experience and maybe some generic examples, is it better for an organization to say, this is where we want to be X amount of time down the road, and we're going to have these take it in small chunks? Or is it better to tackle the big issue with cross-functional teams, or is it both? So it's a loaded question, but just want to start the dialogue on different types of change and see how it can be different, or if there's any common thread amongst that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a really good question. And you're right, James, it does depend on the type of change. So for instance, you know, there's technologically driven change. So let's talk about that one, because I think, you know, we've been doing that for a while now. It's happening faster and faster, but I think that's a good place to start because people will be able to relate to that. So let's talk about, you know, becoming a lot more digital, using digital tools and automated workflows instead of manual tools and manual workflows. So this significantly changes the way people work. So in this type of change, you absolutely want to have a fairly clear vision, which you should review and adjust every year. Because when you start out, your vision is, you know, if you have never actually worked in a fully digital organization, which most people haven't, then you actually don't really know what that's going to look like. So your vision is needs to set you in the right direction, needs to be based on some principles, but that vision is going to become clearer and perhaps shift over time. So that's, you know, one of the important things is to make sure that you have opportunity to evaluate your vision, see if it is shifting or needs to shift, and then make sure everybody is in tune with that. So you need to start out with a directional vision. Why are we doing this? It's not just because, well, you know, we've got to implement technology to keep up. That's not a vision. That's an action. A vision is, what are we hoping to achieve? Are we trying to achieve something better for our customers and clients? Are we trying to achieve something better for our employees? Making, you know, their jobs easier, or making mundane work a lot faster, making work more interesting, you know, those kind of things. Those kind of objectives need to be identified. And as I say, they may change over time, but if you don't have any objectives, then it's either type of change is not going to work. If your objectives are not very clear, every functional area is just going to come up with their own, because everyone will assume something in their mind if they're going to work towards that. If they don't assume anything in their mind, they won't be motivated to work towards anything. So if you're not clear, cross-functional change will not work well, because, you know, everyone's going to have different assumptions. And also, if you're not clear, if you try and do multiple small projects, every project is going to have its own little thing that it's trying to do, which probably won't be aligned with each other and, you know, with any sort of overall direction. So whichever approach you take, the critical thing is to have clear vision that's about what you want to achieve, not what you're going to do, clear objectives, again, about, you know, what are you going to achieve for your customers, for different parts of your organization, and start there. And then, you know, depending on the type of change, you might go either way, maybe a number of small projects or maybe some cross-functional teams.
Excellent. what I'm hearing here and what I really like about this is that change is a critical component of strategy. So, you know, even though the best laid plans and strategies, you know, you do have this vision and that type of thing, you have to implement change into this, and it can't be a tactical approach. You know, correct me if I'm wrong, but some of the times I've seen change management efforts come in, it's to save something that's gone wrong. And there's a real benefit of including change at the start of a project as part of your strategy versus relying on change management as a tactic to come in to save something after the fact to help people, you know, overcome, you know, their, I don't like to use this word, but resistance to change on this, right? Is there any merit to my thought there on this? I deal a lot with strategy in my practice, but I see this where change is brought in too late and it's not identified at the start on a framework of doing this so that it can be implemented effectively and takes into account cause and effect across different stakeholders, as you suggested, employees, leadership, customers, clients, that type of thing.
Yeah. James, I think you've hit the nail on the head. You're spot on. And, you know, that gets us back to you know, what we talked about right at the beginning, is that we need to move from stakeholder engagement to stakeholder inclusion, because a lot of our change is charting a new way and nobody actually knows exactly what that looks like or exactly how to get there. And so you need to have a much more collective intelligence to figure out how to get there. You need all, you know, but back to kind of the fundamental philosophy of lean is that, you know, the people at right at the point of doing the work are the people who are going to have the best ideas of how to do it better. You know, yes, they may not be setting strategy and overall direction, but, you know, once you have a direction of where you want to go as an organization, then you need to involve various stakeholders, internal and external, to put some flesh and bones to that direction, to create some objectives as to how, you know, what do you actually really want to achieve, what is possible to achieve. And what you will find is when you actually include more people, you will discover opportunities that leadership never knew about, right? And maybe, you know, some of these opportunities are not that a big of a deal to change. You will also discover risks, hidden risks that leaders never knew about. And by addressing those risks early and changing, you know, changing your design, or actually creating your design if you address them early enough, creating your design to mitigate those risks, you are so far ahead of the game. And, you know, interesting your point about resistance. Again, involving people early gives them a much greater trust that this change, it potentially is viable, because people have greater trust that, you know, things that they know are risks, but no one will ever listen to them, have been listened to. I mean, think of how many people in organizations right now have been through multiple changes that were not that successful? A lot. And all of those people feel that, you know, they probably could have identified some risks that were not known, not identified until too late. And that causes people to lose trust in the capability of the organization to actually make change happen without a lot of stress and pain. So involving people early in the design and in the decision-making of the scope of change, what needs to change, what should we change first? You know, and I'm not saying make this a democratic process and vote on it, but I am saying that leaders will gain a lot of very useful intel from their employees, from their external stakeholders, that will enable them to make much better decisions for charting their path of change.
No, this is fantastic and right on the spot too. So when we talk about change, it's obviously a patient and purposeful process. You brought up lean, and that's, you know, a lot of leaders aren't patient enough, or the culture of the organization isn't such that they can stop, look at their processes and analyze them in order to move forward. It's a smart process to do this. But when we look at the purpose there, you know, when you involve this type of change management practice, you have to have the right culture. I want your thoughts on this. The culture of the organization has to be accepting of it, and they have to be competent and have the capacity to do it. So that brings me back, you know, to the original, the starting three points we talked about here. But how do you overcome situations in organizations where, you know, people have lost trust, or the culture isn't there where they accept and embrace it, or they just don't feel they have the capacity to do it, thinking they don't have time? It's one of the things you've identified as where they're not committed to making the change happen because they don't feel they have the time. Is there a way where you can go into an organization that doesn't embrace this yet needs it, and then can apply this over time so that they can have this mindset of change that they can embrace? Because things are changing all the time, and those who aren't willing to accept this are going to be left behind. So what advice would you have for anyone listening who's involved in an organization who may feel it's too late or kind of throwing their arms up in the air, just don't know where to start? What do you think some of the options or opportunities are there?
Mm-hmm. That's a really good question, James. So I think, you know, the fundamental thing is if trust is broken, then trust needs to be rebuilt. And there needs to be some time and focus put on that. So there's an interesting research study done that showed that people who trusted their leadership and, you know, not emotional trust, but trusted the ability of their leadership to chart a good path and, you know, to consider everybody's views, those people had over 2.5 times capacity to change than people who did not trust their leadership. So when you think about that, you know, capacity is both time and energy. So taking a bit of time up front to rebuild trust is actually going to decrease your overall time and your overall effort substantially. And it's really, really important to do that. So what are some of the ways to build trust, real trust? You know, you're not going to build trust by, you know, getting everybody in a circle and having them fall over backwards and you get the person behind them to catch them. That's not going to build trust in the capability of, you know, an organization leadership to actually lead change, right? We're talking about trusting capability as well as trust in trusting in the purpose of the change, trust in the fact that leadership actually care about the people who have to make the change. And I'm not talking about emotional care so much as I'm talking about cognitive care, understanding what's involved for people to make the change, not coming up with unrealistic timelines and, you know, or insufficient resources. Those are the biggest things. And, you know, that kind of brings me to another area of research where researchers found that cognitive empathy, in other words, understanding other people's perspective, is far more influential in developing trust than is emotional empathy, which is, you know, understanding how people are feeling. And so this was, you know, an area that I looked at in my research is, how can we employ cognitive empathy in order to actually scope the change, right? So don't go away and do, you know, trust building exercises that have nothing to do with the change. Let's change the way you do change. Let's change the way that you set and define your strategy. Include people in that. Get people's perspectives. And, you know, there's tools and techniques for doing that much more efficiently. And I teach those tools and techniques in my course, Strategic Change by Design. So, you know, but the fundamental purpose first is to understand you need to include people in actually the strategy making process, and include them effectively, include them in a focused way, include them quickly. And you will be building trust at the same time as you're starting to move ahead with your change.
Wow, you bring up some really good points there, some excellent points. I'm going to unpack them a little bit, because one of the things I thought of and I was taking notes here while you were talking, is that when we talk about change, it's not just change in, you know, the organization going forward. There's also a change when you bring on new people and it changes the dynamic of the organization. And now, you know, with the great resignation or whatever you want to call it, people are leaving their careers at a more rapid clip than ever before. So when you bring people on, and then they're integrating into an organization, which I'm sure many of our listeners can relate to. It's you know, you're coming into something different. That's a change in your life, change in your career path. But based on my experience and working with my clients, there's never been, you know, you have the employee onboarding experience, but I think it's very rare, if ever, where you sit down with the employee or the employer and ask the question or share with the person, this is how we do change around here. I know it sounds kind of crazy, but would that be a good strategic imperative? It seems to me like it would be in an organization to be upfront with employees when they're onboarded saying, hey, if there's ever a change, that we have a methodology for how we handle this and a framework, and here we can give you some tips on doing that. Is that something that's, in your experience, ever been done? Or is that something that we should be looking forward to doing in organizations where people embrace change similar to the way that they would understand how to do their jobs effectively or communicate with one another internally?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's actually a very fascinating question, James. And my brain is going around very fast thinking about this. I would say that there's probably not many organizations that do that. And I'd like to take that one step further and say, it's actually not just about how we do change. It's about how we make decisions and how we set strategy. Mm. Because, you know, that's where change is born, right? Is in your strategy and your decision. So, you know, back to your first question, how do we decide what to change? How do we decide how much to change? How do we figure out, you know, why to change, which is essentially, you know, behind the what do we change? I think, and that, you know, how we make decisions, how we interact with each other to make decisions is a very essential part of the informal culture of an organization. And generally, we don't give employees onboarding training about the informal culture of our organization. We'll, you know, speak to them about our values, what our value statements are. They'll see the org chart and who reports to who, and, you know, officially, you know, who's responsible for making decisions. But what about how do we interact to make decisions? How do we interact to raise risks, to identify risks and, you know, raise them to the right level to make sure that, you know, they're assessed and incorporated? How do we identify and raise new ideas, innovative ideas, right? Those questions, I think, are critical. And that's where a lot of organizations may need to change. And, you know, some organizations may already do that very well. Probably most organizations, there's room for improvement there. So adding that into your employee onboarding, in fact, I would say that might even be part of your interview process, right?
Right.
I mean, that's the kind of culture where you need to have similarity of culture. You want to have diversity of perspective. You want to have, you know, inclusion of this diversity of perspective, but you want to have a cohesive culture around how do we make decisions, how do we raise risks, how do we surface innovation.
Right. So it becomes almost like your playbook for dealing with this as it becomes, you know, as it bubbles to the surface with any type of change. And of course, it'll become like a flywheel. The more that you do this effectively and faster and with intention and purpose, the more likely that people are to bring, you know, opportunities to the surface. I mean, I might be talking best case scenarios here, but I like to think that if that culture is there and there's a framework that people understand, okay, I've got an idea. It's like the next evolution of the suggestion box, but with structure around it,
mm-hmm,
right? In a point where they, here's how things are done around here, but towards what impact and why do we, as you suggested, why do we do this? And have a framework of doing this, because quite often, and correct me if I'm wrong, in organizations, it's almost an ad hoc, you know, they have a vision of, here's a plan that we want to do, but what's it going to take to get there? That's a good case scenario. A worse one is, this is happening to us. Now, what are we going to do about it?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. And you see, I think that that whole idea around, you know, how do we make decisions, surface risks, surface opportunities, that's actually, that framework is, you know, that you use that for, okay, so how do we actually make this change happen now? You know, how do we surface risks as we're making the change happen? It's the same kind of framework. And let me give you an example. So there was a mid-sized bank in the United States that few years ago, they're feeling, you know, somewhat threatened by all the digitalization and fintech and this and that. And, you know, they weren't a huge bank. They didn't have tons of resources to be able to invest in all of this. And so they wanted to get, they wanted to involve their bank tellers and, you know, financial advisors, the people at the front line. They wanted to involve, you know, the folks working in the back office. How can we use digital tools to be more effective and more efficient? And so they actually set up a structure, they call it an innovation lab structure. And they very clearly articulated what they wanted to achieve in the next year, in terms of, you know, better service to customers or increased efficiency. They identified some target areas, and research has found that innovation actually happens a lot more. People are more innovative within constraints than just, you know, open-ended, you know, well, what could we do that would be innovative and make things better? So they picked particular strategic areas where they felt constrained and they wanted to improve. And then they actually had a whole framework for people, complete with some tools and some video training, where anybody could prepare a proposal, and they had a framework and a template for preparing a very short proposal that said how their idea would contribute to, you know, one of these target areas for this year. And then that was reviewed by a cross-functional team of people across the bank. And they identified the ones that they felt were, you know, not necessarily the best ideas, but the most valuable for right now for what they were trying to achieve. And then the people who came up with the idea were part of the team. And in fact, they were asked to even identify other people on the team who actually took it to the next stage and you know, started scoping it, were involved in scoping it. And a senior executive would be, at this point, they had a midline kind of director, senior manager, director level who would shepherd that. And again, they had a process for people to go through to identify the scope, who, you know, some of the, your typical stuff, who's impacted, how much is impacted, what resources, you know, all that kind of stuff, what's the risks. And then that was assessed at a senior level, the set. And out of that, they would pick, you know, maybe three or four that, okay, this is what we're actually going to implement. And they did this fast. Like, it was time boxed because they had evaluations every quarter and, you know, every month at the lower level, every quarter at the second level. So it was time boxed. It didn't take absolutely forever. And people were equipped to go through it. And once people had gone through this the first time, you know, they went through it, you know, they got an idea the next year, like maybe their first idea wasn't accepted because, you know, it didn't align, but they got another idea the next year, they were able to go through much faster. And now when they actually come time to implement something, you know, the people whose idea it was, who are usually the people who are most impacted, because it was, you know, an idea of how you and your area could change, not, you know, how somebody else could change. You know, they own it. They designed it. It rolling it out is fast and easy because you don't have to explain it to everybody. You don't have to overcome resistance. You don't have to rework it because you missed half of it. So that was an extremely good example of a company, a bank, very hierarchical company, but that put the structure in place to actually empower and train and focus people to participate in their strategic process.
What a fascinating example. And you can see how that could potentially lead. Now, I don't know if there's any metrics on this, but you could get metrics on this, on employee retention, customer satisfaction, leadership development. Mm-hmm. I would think that a program like this impacts a lot of departments within an organization because it probably makes HR's job a lot easier. So from the human resources perspective there, less people defecting from the organization because they feel heard and they probably their experience with the company is higher and their satisfaction rates. And it makes the marketing department's job easier and customer experience because, you know, even if it's an internal process being enhanced, then employees can deliver services more effectively and faster, or it could be customer facing in the case of the bank here. So really great example of how, you know, this change management or change leadership process can really impact that. So that's excellent, which leads me into my next question. It's a nice segue here for your course, Louise, Strategic Change by Design certificate. You've developed a course in this. Maybe tell us a little bit about that and how, if anyone's interested, how they can participate or learn more about the course.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, James. Yeah, so Strategic Change by Design, it's a certificate that I developed in concert with CMC Ontario. Probably we started, I think, about 5 years ago, at least 5 or 6 years ago. But it's a number of modules. So it's, you know, it follows the framework that came out of my PhD research called the Change Action Framework. So all these things that we have talked about in this podcast, it's a framework for making that happen. And so there's three modules. It's online. It's designed for busy professionals. So it's online, but we do have live sessions as well. There's online discussion. So a lot of different ways for interacting, flexible to, you know, do a lot of the study on your own time, as well as, you know, accountability in that community of having online discussion plus some set live sessions. And so you can find out more about that at the CMC Canada website under events or the CMC Ontario website under events. You can also find out if you want to really like look at the course curriculum and all of that, you can see that at my website, learn.changedesign.institute. And, you know, the idea is, you know, let's teach people not only a framework, but some tools. And so that was what I did in my research as well. That was the main, one of the main points of my research is, can we develop some tools that are more effective and take less time than your typical focus groups using, you know, flip charts. And I did my research in healthcare because, of course, you know, healthcare has incredible time constraints on their staff. You can't take, you know, get a bunch of nurses to come and do a 5-day sprint, or even do, you can't get a bunch of nurses to come do a 1/2-day workshop. Like they, you know, they're working overtime shifts as it is. So how can we create some tools that helps us communicate, and we use, you know, visual communication, specially designed diagrams that help people communicate and design change together in, you know, as small as 10-minute increments. So yeah, I would, I've given you a number of different places, and I'm sure James will probably put direct links to those in the description below the podcast as well.
Yes, absolutely. Thanks, Louise. And just again, the website address, your website, if anybody's interested.
Yeah, so my website is learn.changedesign.institute. That's where you'll find all the curriculum. CMC members do register through CMC. You will receive a discount.
Thank you. And the goal here is to develop a competency framework for change, which is the essence of change itself, right? Is if you have a competency to do this, then you can impact change, much like your bank example, correct?
Exactly. Yes.
Fantastic. And if anyone, this has been great, Louise. What a fantastic experience. Thank you for joining us here today. What is the best way to reach you? Is there an email address, or is it just through the website, or a phone number perhaps if anybody wants to get in contact? What is the best way if anybody wants to reach out and learn more about change?
Absolutely. Well, through my website, you can also sign up on the website to an email list, which I will be publishing tips and et cetera to. You can connect to me on LinkedIn. And you can email me directly at louise.harris@stos.ca. So that's louise.harris@stos.ca.
Excellent. Thank you so much for your time today, Louise. This has been wonderful. And we'll look forward to learning more on the dynamics of change with you in the future, and hopefully others will too. Thanks a lot and have a great day.
That's great. Thanks so much, James. And I really, this was a really enjoyable, really loved interviewing with you. Mm-hmm.